welcome back to the FPL Lounge podcast. We are back with our game week 26 preview, a blank game week for four teams. My name is Chris Hopkins, and I am joined by the big Jim Ratcliffe to my Big Jim Pub Quiz. It's Andy Case. I mean, you won't be aware of Big Jim Pub Quiz, Andy. That was a pub quiz I used to attend when I was a youth back in Colchester. He was a very large man. But let's move on, really, to the matter in question. Big Jim Ratcliffe, I think he's done his first major interview about what he's intended to do, and obviously his stake has been sort of officially ratified this week. You must be, I guess, anxiously excited, a little bit of trepidation, but generally quite excited about what might happen.
Yeah, I mean, you can never, even though his plan sounds sensible, you can never guarantee like success in sport, right? But for so long, having self-serving like guardians of the club with no desire to make the football product successful, whatever they say, it's a huge positive shift to have someone who is just doing simple, sensible things. So yeah, it's definitely a huge positive, and regardless of the size of his stake, the key bit being that he has complete like control of football operations. And obviously, as we know about the CEO, he's poached from City, and obviously all the noise around Ashworth coming in as like sporting director or whatever. And he said in this interview, being clear that the aim is best in class. I mean, and the proof has been in the pudding so far of that, is he's going around and picking some of the people who are known to be the best in world football in their positions. So like you can't argue with that, really. And yeah, like I say, positive steps, and hopefully that gives you the best chance ultimately, doesn't it, of trying to get success. So that's all we can ask for at this point. Yeah,
and you get a sense from him that he's gonna like want to maybe bring in his own manager, and like how involved he might be in that side of the club, as particularly maybe in terms of, you know, player recruitment and stuff like that. Is there any kind of gauge on that at the minute? Because I guess from a fan point of view, expectation is going to be pretty high at the start of next year, given he's in now and it feels like there is going to be at least some footballing stability. But, you know, the jury's still well out on Ten Hag and his system and what he's bringing to the club.
Well, hopes might be raised next season, but he was even in this interview very clear about the fact it's not an overnight process. There's so much to fix and there's so much to change that it's literally not possible. And also FFP just means that even if they wanted to throw loads of money at it in the summer, they can't. So I'm sure there will be positive strides made over the course of the next year. There already have been some, but it is just not going to be possible that, like, you're talking about, you know, winning the league next season or anything, right? So, you know, he described it in this interview as a few years, like, project at least to be back at that level, right? So, yeah, hopes may be raised, but I think you have to be realistic. And like I say, he's even been explicitly clear about the fact that we're not necessarily talking that level of success next season. And then on Ten Hag, he hasn't, I don't think he's, it doesn't seem like to me, the noises he's making, he's desperate to get rid of him necessarily. He's definitely willing to give him a chance. But one thing he's been absolutely clear on, and this has been the case at all his other clubs and sporting projects he's worked on as well, that the manager doesn't pick the transfers or the style of play. That will be for the structure that he's bringing in, putting in place a CEO, sporting director, etc. The manager can be involved in that like discussion, but isn't the ultimate decision maker. And then the manager aligns with that style of play and that plan across the whole club. So I think, and because he's been very direct and very clear about that in this interview, I think the message there is, if Ten Hag, for whatever reason, is not on board with the style that they want to go with, then he absolutely would be out the door. And that's something we don't know. I mean, Ten Hag himself seems like very direct and like stubborn, maybe the wrong word, but clear about the way he would like to play in an ideal world. He hasn't really been able to do that with the players he's got United at the moment. And so I get the impression that he's a type of person as well, where if for whatever reason those things don't align, he wouldn't want to be in that structure either. So perhaps it would be a straightforward, you'd hope, amicable parting if it were to happen, because they're both very direct and clear people in that regard. So we'll see, basically.
Yeah, interesting and exciting times from Man United. And yeah, I'm sure, I guess in some way, shape or form, when we're doing this in a few months' time, Andy, looking ahead to the 24-25 season, one would hope that there might be some Man United players, in our long weekend that we're looking at, given perhaps a bit of a new dawn at the club. But yeah, only time will tell. In the immediate future, Andy, obviously we've got a blank game week to navigate. So as always on our preview shows, we'll start by running down the reduced slate from this week's FPL fixtures. We'll have a quick chat about those talking points, including going through those blanks. We've got some new players on the radar, I guess specifically for the blanks, and also looking ahead to potential blanks and doubles in the coming game weeks. We're going to be trying to catch each other in our honey traps, and then we will be finishing, as we always do, with captaincy and who the heck is stat. Let's start then by running down those all-important game week 26 fixtures. Your deadline for this game week 26 is Saturday the 24th of February at 1:30 p.m. UK time, and that's because we have 4 3 o'clock kickoffs to kick off game week 26. They are Aston Villa versus Nottingham Forest, Brighton versus Everton, Crystal Palace versus Burnley, and Andy's Man United against Fulham.
Two games on Saturday evening, Bournemouth versus Man City at 5:30 and then Arsenal versus Newcastle at 8. Moving on to Sunday, just the one game, Wolves versus Sheffield United, but that is, of course, because we've got the Carabao Cup final after that, which should be interesting as well. And a Monday night football, West Ham versus Brentford.
So yeah, those four teams then on blank this game week, and obviously the Carabao Cup final between Liverpool and Chelsea means that they are blanking, but also Luton and Tottenham thrown into that mix as well. Obviously Liverpool and Luton have already had their fixture. They had it in double 25, but Chelsea-Tottenham will be rearranged later on. I guess, Andy, I think we definitely touched on this at the top of the show last week, but it seems like there was quite a lot of focus in the FPL community on double game week 25 and therefore blank game week 26, but perhaps less so about the other doubles and blanks that we've got on the horizon. Double game week 28 is a pretty small one. That's the Bournemouth-Luton rearranged game following Tom Lockyer's collapse on the pitch. So yeah, so both of those teams will have a double in 28. And then we've got a pretty large, sizable blank ahead of game week or in game week 29, and at the minute the only teams that are guaranteed a fixture in that game week are Villa, Brentford, Burnley, Fulham, Tottenham and West Ham. Feels a pretty difficult one to navigate, and I know that we got into the strategy side of things a little bit last week, so if listeners want to go back and listen to that, they definitely can. I guess the key thing here is that after this game week, we will have the clearest idea that we're ever going to get really about who is blanking in game week 29, because of the FA Cup. The FA Cup fixtures will be played before our game week 27 deadline. So yeah, you'll know exactly who's blanking in 29 after this deadline, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And that's key, right? So if for whatever reason you have the opportunity to roll this game week, you will have significantly more information before next game week. So that seems like a really sensible strategy. Yeah, like a reminder that the round 5 FA Cup fixtures are next midweek and there's no replays from that round onwards. So there will definitely be definitive results in all those fixtures. So we will know which teams will and won't play in game week 29. I think, well, more often than, well, always, almost always, they do the draw, don't they, as well, for the quarterfinals, the next round to come. So that might give us some steer about percentages and probabilities of teams that may make the semi-finals as well, which starts to give us a hint towards 34. Obviously nothing guaranteed at that point, but useful for potential planning towards wildcards or other opportunities for free hits later down the line. So yeah, significantly more information, and yeah, very clear definitive information about game week 29 in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it is worth saying at this point that even though we don't know exactly who's going to be playing in 29, we're not really anticipating loads more teams playing. We're anticipating quite a few blanks, I guess at least five and probably six, I think, at least. Obviously, you know, there are only three fixtures on at the minute. So, but yeah, we're only really expecting one, maybe two to be added to that. It does appear as though one of either Man United and Sheffield United or Luton and Nottingham Forest are likely to be added to the slate. But yeah, beyond that, it feels pretty slim pickings. I think as we touched on last week, Andy, you know, I think there's going to be a lot. Well, it feels like there are essentially two strategies going into 29. You either kind of dead end into it, which means you need to use free transfers and make sure you've got as good a team as you can of the, you know, among players playing in that game week 29 fixture, or you free hit in it and try and get out of it that way. I mean, I guess in theory you could also wild card in that game week, but then you're gonna probably scupper yourself with, you know, a handful of Burnley and Fulham players for the run in. So yeah, that feels like the two main ways out of that. And I think I've asked you this in seasons gone by, and there isn't really a definitive answer, but you know, I'm guessing if you can engineer it that you've got a starting team, then maybe it's worth leaving your free hit for later in the season. If you've got 10, maybe that's a decision to make, but 9, 8, and I think, you know, you and I might be in the area, you know, just using free transfers between now and then, of maybe just 7 players, it really is very tempting on that occasion to take the free hit and yeah, not use it in an attacking sense to target a double down the line, but use it in a defensive sense to get you through your pretty ropey blank.
Yeah, well, I guess if you shift the mindset of like defensive use or attacking use of the chip, right, and just think about it as like, how much extra can I gain? How many extra players in any given game week can I gain? Then I think it helps with the analysis of what's a potentially better route, right? Because yeah, like you and I had the discussion of if we would both at the moment, as it stands, only have 7 if we use all our free transfers towards game week 29 now. And you know, there could be a decision where you decide, well, I'll just play that game week with 7 players, and it is what it is. There are some game weeks where I have 4 players blank. I just hope the others do the job, right? So that's quite a risky one, but it's a strategy, right? If you were to free hit, you would obviously gain those 4 players, but actually more than that, you'd gain probably an improved 11 overall, because you're going to maximise your funds towards the best players that are playing in that game week. Like someone that springs to my mind straight away would be a Son in that game week in particular, who's probably not in a lot of teams right now.
He's the only premium asset available really that game week as things stand, isn't he? So yeah, you'd imagine he'd be in a lot of free hit teams that week.
No, exactly. Yeah. But then, and so if you were to, the other strategy, if people aren't free hitting in 29, is more often than not, it looks like people are going to be trying to free hit in 34. And in that case, you know, because there's quite a few teams potentially doubling, you would likely have a number of double game week players anyway. You obviously can't bench boost when you're using a free hit. So your maximum you're looking at is your 11, and how many extra doublers would your free hit chip give you compared to what you might have anyway? Because for example, if you are free hitting in 29, by definition you're not dead ending into 29, and so you don't have to wild card in 30. You could wild card in 32 or 33 in preparation for 34 with trying to load up on double game week players anyway. So using the free hit in 24, how much extra does that gain you over that strategy? Because that game week 34 is Liverpool, you know, potential Liverpool City in an FA Cup semi-final, there could be some upside to using your free hit because you can snuffle some of those players out. They would likely still have a single, but not a double in that game week. So would you want 3 of each, which you might have for other game weeks? So there are other advantages as well. But still, just in terms of number of extra fixtures your team that week will have, I think it's arguable that there could be, depending on your situation, more to gain from what you would use your free hit for in 29 in terms of number of extra fixtures added to your team. So yeah, that's what you're sort of looking at and trying to weigh up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess just one final note really, Andy, in this week's talking points, obviously, is the appointment of a new Crystal Palace manager. Don't know loads about him. Not sure if you do. But yeah, obviously with Roy Hodgson likely to be departing at the end of the season anyway, but obviously he's being taken ill earlier through this year. I think he's made the decision to step away early so Palace can replace him. I guess there isn't loads to mention, Andy, because really we've been quite underwhelmed by Palace most of the season. They feel like the sort of most obvious two-man team in the league. Like, if Eze and Elise aren't there, there's just not a lot going on, really, is there? And those two are so pivotal to what they do. I mean, if those two get back fit again and, you know, this new manager gets his feet under the table, then sure, those two could be decent assets maybe for the run-in. But those are big ifs at the minute. And obviously, these two players have been dogged by injury pretty much all year. So, yeah, it's really dependent on those. And yeah, I guess we're not looking for... we're not going to be looking at other Crystal Palace assets now they've got supposedly a better manager through the door.
Well, I mean, there was a bit on Monday Night Football this week. There was lots of interesting analysis on Monday Night Football this week, but one of the pieces was they did a little bit on Oliver Glasner, the new Palace manager. Jesse Marsh knew a bit about him from his time in Germany. And there's some interesting info there. Sort of obviously one of these more modern style of managers, and obviously Europa League winner at Frankfurt. That's a pretty good badge to have on your CV. But unfortunately for him, yeah, those two key players for Palace as they are at the moment are both linked with potential moves away in the summer, and Elise in particular is rumoured to have a release clause that becomes active this summer in his contract. So would obviously, and it's not an outrageous, I think it's like 40-50 million is the rumoured amount, which in the current market is possibly not a completely outrageous fee for him. Difficult when you're in that position, probably as a club, isn't it, that there's not like loads you can do about it. But then ultimately you get 50 million in your bank and you've got a new manager, and maybe he'd appreciate the opportunity to be able to spread that around the squad a bit more. So yeah, but that's longer term anyway. Obviously that's looking towards the summer. We'll have to see if he can. I mean, I think his Frankfurt teams were known for being relatively like solid and not conceding loads, right? So you know, we have spoken about Palace defensive assets over the years a number of times when they have had peaks of good form. Roy was typically a pretty defensive, decently solid defensive manager, and when they've had good runs of fixtures, they've got good value, you know, 4.5 million sort of starters and 4.5 million keepers who've kept a few clean sheets over the years. So there could be some of those. I wouldn't be completely shocked if some of that, if he does solidify them a bit, they come back into the thinking.
Yeah, I mean, Edwards was in teams earlier in the year as well, so you know, maybe a budget forward. But yeah, I mean, their teams, you know, that Frankfurt team that won the Europa League was, you know, pretty decent going forward too. So yeah, let's wait and see. But yeah, I think without Elise and Eze, it's not the greatest start for Glasner. Let's move on then, Andy, to our radar, and once again, no one on the centre, but we do have a new player on the mid-range, and that is Dominic Solanke. I think both of us had without patting ourselves on the back too much, we had a pretty decent game week 25, Andy, but a lot of that came from sticking with players like Dominic Solanke that others seem to have binned off in the last couple of weeks. Solanke at 6.9 million still feels pretty reasonable. I don't know if I'm guessing he was 6.5 earlier in the season, so it still, you know, is perhaps more expensive than he started, but still feels pretty cheap compared to maybe what he was. I'm not sure if you can just have a quick look at how his price peaked so far this year. But ultimately, this guy has the third best non-penalty XG in the game at the moment, or in the last six matches. But yeah, out of any players in the game, he's the third best, and also has a double game week in game week 28. I guess the health warning on Solanke is that it is Man City at home this game week, so definitely not the easiest fixture. But City haven't exactly looked imperious at the back, and Solanke is perhaps the sort of player with his back to goal that could affect things, at least at that end of the pitch. But yeah, I guess upside maybe limited somewhat this week, but ultimately good fixtures on the horizon, and yeah, that double definitely appeals.
Yeah, I mean, 7.1 his peak, by the way, this season so far. So yeah, 6.9. I mean, not only regardless of that though, to be honest, at the moment we're at the point where I'd say even as high as maybe 7.5 or even 8 is perfectly reasonable for the level of output we're getting. Like, form, I think the only reason that really is stopping him being on the center here is that we don't know for definite that he'd be playing in 29, right? I think, and the fact that it's Man City for him this game, yeah, week, right? But if it wasn't Man City this game week and we knew he was playing in 29, I think the level we're seeing in terms of form, that would be the fixture box, right? Form and underlying numbers, he's hitting all those metrics, right? He's producing output, and he's been in that top three for non-penalty XG in his last six games for weeks and weeks and weeks now. Like, but you know, if we were to, it's not very quick for us to do this, so we won't be able to probably do it whilst we're talking, but if we were to look over a longer period than six matches, like maybe 10, 12, or going back even further than that, I reckon he'd still be up there. So it's that level of longevity, of good numbers, both from him, the XG and stuff that he's getting, but Bournemouth as a team continuing to be pretty good at producing XG and not conceding it too badly either. So yeah, definitely having a bit of a purple patch to them at the moment, and so therefore 6.9 million for what has been one of the best, most consistent in terms of underlying numbers attacking assets over certainly the latter half of this season so far, it's actually pretty outrageous. And then when you chuck in, oh my god, once you get past Man City this game week, basically the three relegation candidates, right, in within two game weeks, Burnley, Sheffield United and Luton, it's a sensational run for those two game weeks at least. Yeah,
absolutely. And as you say, you know, if we got any sniff of them playing in 29, it would really, really elevate things here. But obviously that's depending on your strategy. But yeah, I think he fully justifies his place on the mid-range. And yeah, as Andy says, you know, maybe his price wasn't quite as high as I thought it might have reached, but yeah, the fact that it has gone down again is obviously owed to sales, possibly just to bring Haaland back in. But yeah, it feels like he should have been held on for a little bit longer, and for me that was pretty key. And yeah, it was nice to see him get a goal and assist at the weekend. Let's move outwards, Andy, to the fringe, and I guess one of the reasons why Dominic Solanke is perhaps, you know, higher up than this guy is because he is still cheaper than him, despite the fact that, you know, Solanke's had, I guess, on the whole, a better season, but a player that is definitely coming into goal scoring form. And I wonder how many of our listeners have wondered when this guy's going to get a radar mention, but Rasmus Højlund makes it onto the fringe, I guess, for the first time, Andy. I don't think we might have mentioned him in anyone else a handful of times, maybe at the start of the season, but
yeah.
But yeah, I imagine he might be making his fringe debut. 7.2 million. But he is obviously in a really rich vein of goal-scoring form at the moment. But it is being backed up by the underlying numbers. He is the fourth best, or has the fourth best non-penalty XG of all of the forwards in the game. So I think just below Solanke, as we've already mentioned. And then it's Nunez and Haaland. 7.2 million, Andy, still feels pretty affordable for me. And I guess, again, if we didn't have this blank in 29, we'd really be looking a pretty favourable fixture run. Man United do have Man City in game week 27 and a probable blank in 29. But other than that, the fixtures are there. So if you can make it work, I feel like you could be a pretty interesting differential going forward.
Well, I mean, definitely. I mean, again, regardless of his price, he scored in six consecutive games. There's not many players in the Premier League have ever done that. He's now the youngest to have ever done it. I think it was only like three for Man United had ever done it before. And I mean, if you're a Man United fan and this doesn't get you horny for Højlund, then I don't know what will. But he joins a list. He becomes the fourth player on a list with Eric Cantona, Ruud van Nistelrooy and Cristiano Ronaldo.
It's definitely company, isn't it? It's definitely company.
That's the company you want your number nine to be in. Like, this is the guy we wanted him to be. And I don't want to get too excited because it's one of them where you could kind of see it with your eyes in that early part of the season, even when he wasn't scoring goals, that just kind of like the movement and the kind of, I don't know, like the way he tried to get in the positions for chances looked like a good level striker, right? So I'm hopeful it's sustainable. And yeah, obviously time will tell. If we're still talking about him like this, you know, in another year's time, then fantastic, right? But yeah, so you, I don't necessarily trust Man United as a team fully, but you know, he seems like someone who can continually keep getting in those positions. So yeah, the Man City fixture is definitely a problem here, as is a potential blank in 29. There's a lot of players though. I mean, ultimately, if you're free hitting in 29, that doesn't matter to you. And if you're not free hitting in 29, well then, you know, you've got a very limited pool from which you can pick anyway, and that would completely dominate your radar, your own personal radar. So yeah, I think depending on your situation, there's definitely worse options. The biggest thing that holds him back, and I know you alluded to this when you introduced it, was is the fact that there are three particularly good striker option. We've mentioned Solanke and obviously, but Haaland and Watkins are very high owned, who we haven't mentioned, both also fantastic striker options at the moment, right? So I guess that's potentially a stumbling block for someone like Haaland, is that you have to proactively not have one of those three.
Yeah, I guess it does perhaps depend on your strategy. I think obviously you mentioned Watkins there, and his big appeal is that he plays in 29, but if you are going to free hit in 29, then it doesn't really matter, and therefore, yeah, maybe I would start to think about Haaland instead, especially as a way of saving a little bit of money. And yeah, depending on your strategy, if you do own Darwin Nunes and you think that you're not sure how long he's going to be out for, then maybe going to Haaland would be where I would go instead of going to Watkins. But yeah, that's only if you are going to free hit in 29, because otherwise Watkins is almost an essential own, frankly, if you're going to try and dead end in 29 and you're desperately in need of an Aston Villa player.
Just to say as well, this is going off Haaland, but I was interested to see how Solanke's numbers stood up over a longer period of time. And he is second in the game over the course of the whole season for non-penalty XG. Only, of course, Erling Haaland is ahead of him, but he's ahead of Salah. He's ahead of Watkins. He's ahead of anyone else you want to pick. Obviously, Salah goes slightly above him when you just look at XG. But even then, only marginally, there's like 0.2 XG in it. And Solanke is also on pens. It's just he hasn't had as many as Salah has.
Salah did go to AFCON, didn't he? So.
Well, true. But Solanke, yeah, third for XG in the whole game.
Yeah,
and second for non-penalty XG. So but also being Bournemouth's penalty taker when they get them. So yeah, outrageous sort of numbers for that value, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely just feels like he's kind of come of age this year. So yeah, and it's quite nice to see. Moving or staying on the fringe, but moving on, Andy, we've kind of got two groups of team midfielders here. Let's start with Aston Villa, because yeah, I guess if you are going to dead end into 29, you're going to need some Villa midfielders potentially, or looking at the teams that guarantee the fixture in 29, Villa feel like one of the more appealing ones, perhaps along with Tottenham. But obviously they blank this game week, so we wouldn't be advocating for any Tottenham transfers in 26. Villa have quite a nice pool of four sort of available midfielders. I mean, for me, I think that there are three well above the fourth one here, but I know that you may tend to disagree based on what we've seen in previous seasons. Douglas Luiz and John McGinn at 5.5 million, Leon Bailey at 5.6 million, and then Jacob Ramsey at 5.9 million. It's really hard, Andy, I think, to go through all of these and sort of discuss their pros and their cons, but ultimately here you have like a guy with the highest upside, you've got two guys that have pretty good expected minutes, one of them's on penalties, and then you've got a bit of a wild card in Ramsey, who's a little bit more expensive, but what we've seen from him in previous years is pretty outstanding, and a real ability to get forward and finish well. I guess the question that I can pose to you here is, like, is just lumping for Douglas Luiz because he's on penalties the boring pick? Let me rephrase that one. Actually, let me ask you a slightly different question. Is lumping for Douglas Luiz at 5.5 because he's on penalties the sensible pick?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even Well, it's sensible because he's on penalties. Yes, it's boring because the rest of his numbers aren't huge, right? The fact he's on penalties is not the thing that makes it a boring pick, right? It's probably the thing that makes it a sensible pick. Yeah. But that plus the expected minutes, I think too. If we had more certainty about, let's say, Ramsey and Bailey in particular with their potential ceilings, although Bailey's shown it significantly more than Ramsey has this season, then arguably that out there attacking output is far greater than Louise's. He sits in a much deeper position than them, right? McGinn is a little bit more sporadic. His ex-mins are higher, but not on pens and not as attacking, more attacking than Louise, but not as attacking as Bailey and Ramsey, right? So he's a bit of a kind of middle of the road. You're not really getting any of the benefits almost with McGinn other than the expected minutes, but then Louise gives you that plus pens. So yeah, it's a tricky one, this, and definitely this is in the wheelhouse of the non-free hitters for 29, right? Because I think none of them massively appeal if you're not free hitting in 29. But if you are, like, then the fact that there's a bit less upside on any of these is negated by the fact that they have a fixture versus some other players that don't.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think on Douglas Luiz, he's definitely played in a slightly different role this year to previous ones, and so has McGinn, really. They haven't, like, Douglas Luiz has kind of always sort of felt like the screen for Aston Villa, but I guess signing Boubacar Kamara has kind of made that role a little bit more redundant, and he's kind of been playing more as an eight this season. That said, goal output without penalties has been okay, but still not brilliant. I mean, John McGinn's got, I know it's not showing up in the underlying numbers, but he's got 6 league goals this year. I mean, that must be one of his best returns in a Villa shirt. So yeah, I mean, I can definitely see the appeal for kind of all of these. And frankly, I'm not sure really where I'd be going myself. I guess I would probably pump for Luiz because, yeah, you know, if they did get a penalty, he's been pretty good at them and pretty mustered. So yeah, that's maybe where I'd end up. But yeah, there's definitely some upside. And as you say, I think ultimately if you are dead-ending in 29, one of these is essential. And maybe there's just a kind of cigarette paper between them and you just got to make your mind up. But yeah, me being the cynic that I am, I know the one that I won't pick will be the one that ends up returning come 29. So yeah, you almost feel a bit damned if you do and damned if you don't. But yeah, yeah, I guess beyond that, Andy, there's not really a great deal to say about them. So then maybe let's move on to Wolves midfielders who we've kind of grouped together as well, but only two real standouts here for us. Pedro Neto, who long-time listeners will know we were severely burned by in the 22-23 season, and Hwang Hee-chan, who's also made several appearances, I think, on our radar over the years. Maybe some fitness concerns over Hwang. He's only played once since he returned from the Asian Cup, but he did put in an 87-minute shift in that game. Pedro Neto at 5.7 has had his injury problems, but on the eye, I think, looks far and away Wolves' best player. These two have caught the eye this year, and I think Gary O'Neill's style has caught the eye. You know, Wolves, you're probably not backing them to keep loads and loads of clean sheets, although I think their underlying defensive numbers aren't terrible. But it's the attacking players, really, that I guess look the best on the eye, even if they're not as a team creating loads. But they're still, you know, they don't have terrible fixtures on the horizon. I think they're pretty good, and these two are pretty affordable. Both listed as a midfielder and can kind of play out of position as well. So there's plenty to like.
Yeah, and like the bottom line is Hwang's got 10 goals in the league this season, right? And I think we've brought this up a couple of times. I think there was a point when we had him on Who the Heck Is Stat, where we'd talked about something like 5-6 home games in a row in which he'd scored or something. Mm-hmm. And the key good fixtures over in Wolves' run over the next three before the blank is Sheffield United at home and Fulham at home. So Hwang is back and will be very likely playing, you know, through the if not through the middle, then in some sort of attacking position. So at 5.5 million and as a midfielder and with a great record of scoring at home this season, if you are, again, you know, if you're not so worried, this is almost the other side of the coin to the Villa ones, right, is that if you're not worried about 29, I mean, Wolves could end up playing in 29, but at the moment as it stands, you know, there is a threat of a blank there for them. So if that's not a worry, then there are not going to be many cheap midfielders with as much potential for goals as someone like a Hwang in particular. I mean, I'm really leaning towards him because of the fact he's probably more likely to have higher expected minutes than Neto and more likely to be through the middle, you'd think. It's not unthinkable that with Hwang left and Neto through the middle, but
I think with Cunha out, you're probably expecting Hwang through the middle, I would think.
And so, he's been the one in the goals, so
yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's leave the radar there, Andy. Anyone else for a final pick? I guess we've got one player that's maybe worth a bit of a mention, but yeah, probably not quite sneaking on the radar just yet.
Yeah, well, it's just Van Heek from Brighton, really. Like, a lot of people shipping out Estupiñán now because he's been rotated a lot more recently, whereas Van Heek had started every game since game week 11, and he's only 4.1 million. Fourth best over the last six game weeks, non-penalty expected goals conceded. Brighton have been a bit up and down. Can you trust that trend like to sustain itself? But I mean, ultimately, over the last six game weeks, it certainly has been something that's managed to develop. So a 4.1 million defender who's pretty much a consistent starter in the fourth best team for defensive underlying numbers, with a decent run between now and the blank, Everton, Fulham, Forest, Brighton's four games, worth a shout probably.
Yeah, I think as a Jarrod Branthwaite owner, if I didn't already own him, then I think this would be my incredibly budget defender that I'd be going with now, especially given those three fixtures on the horizon. Not the greatest attacks in those 3 years. So yeah, I think he presents some pretty good value at the minute. All right, Andy, let's leave it there. Let's take a quick break. And then when we return, we will be trying to catch each other in our honey traps.
Here at the FPL Lounge, we are keen to hear from you. You can join in the conversation on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_lounge. We will preview every game week throughout the season, exploring options for your chips and transfers. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods so that you have all the information you need before the game week deadline. Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.
Welcome back then. So honey trap this week, Andy, but let's start by wrapping up those honey traps from last week. You laid a trap out for me, which was that Højlund and Garnacho will outscore Julian Alvarez in his double. I didn't take you up on that, and I was right to do so. Højlund and Garnacho combined for, am I reading this right, 18 points, Andy, last week? I mean, I know Højlund scored, but I'm guessing Garnacho got an assist then.
Well, yeah, Højlund scored twice, and Garnacho got an assist.
Oh,
so, yeah, three returns. So, Alvarez is one, I think, over the game week.
Yeah, and Alvarez was just 7, I think, just, but, you know, decent, I guess, but 7 points for him. So, yeah, I was right to not fall into that trap. For me, I put out Darwin Núñez does not score this game week, which is one that we've had a little bit of a laugh about off air, because if I'd have told you, Andy, at the start of the game week that he was only going to play 45 minutes, I think you'd have, don't think you'd have necessarily taken me up on that. But as it transpires, he did only play 45 minutes, but he only needed 35 to score. I think we think this is probably the quickest honey trap to have been lost in the history of the FPL Lounge. So, good finish as well, which I guess was kind of one of the reasons why I put it out there, because I don't really trust his finishing, but it was an outrageous little chip over Mark Flecken, wasn't it? So yeah, fair play to Darwin. But yeah, if only he had been injured for even longer, Andy, then maybe other one. We don't like wishing injuries upon players on this podcast, of course.
Well, of course not. No, absolutely. Certainly not. No. And certainly not for the sake of winning a honey trap. No.
Exactly. What you got for me this week, Andy? Show me the honey, bebe.
Okie dokes. Well, this is potentially a little bold. I'll be interested to see what you think about it. And it is from the Andy Case wheelhouse of honey traps.
Yeah.
I am going to suggest that there will be a maximum of one clean sheet on Saturday.
On clean sheet on Saturday. I did think about going down the clean sheets route, and I was definitely thinking more than one clean sheet.
So I'll just quickly run through for the listener what those fixtures are. It's Villa, Forest, Brighton, Everton, Palace, Burnley, United, Fulham, Bournemouth City, and Arsenal versus Newcastle.
Yeah, I mean, so I was definitely looking at this as like a whole weekend slate and then trying to think of a kind of an over under clean sheets, or maybe even at one point I was thinking about backing like, or put laying out there'll be one or more nil nils. So I think based on that, I'm going to have to take you on it. I mean, ultimately, we've got some teams here that aren't necessarily completely goal shy, but don't create consistently lots of opportunities. Forest being one, Everton being another. You know, we've just spoken about Brighton's underlying defensive numbers. You know, Palace and Burnley kind of feels like it's got nil-nil written all over it. I mean, you don't trust United's defence, but against Fulham, maybe you do. City could easily keep a clean sheet against Bournemouth. Arsenal Newcastle feels like the only one that's got guaranteed goals in it, but then Arsenal have the best underlying defensive numbers in the league. So I think for that reason, I'm going to have to take you on it, because, yeah, I feel like there could quite easily be two. Yeah, two across, what, 12 teams.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was essentially relying on defensive sloppiness, because I think, yeah, you could view it as basically what you've just said this game week. Yeah, like, you could absolutely see both Palace and Brighton keeping clean sheets at home, to, for example, to Everton and Burnley, who don't create a great deal, right? City, clearly you could see them keeping a clean sheet against Bournemouth. Arsenal or Newcastle, I mean, Arsenal particularly being at home and having some of the best defensive numbers in the league, when Newcastle with no strikers. So, yeah, it's I think there's definitely routes for a victory and maybe even a comfortable victory here. But I thought, you know, I didn't really ever consider two, because that felt like too many to put out there, and maybe wouldn't have taken the gamble that you're looking for three clean sheets on Saturday. So, yeah, that's where it is.
Yeah, no worries. I'll take you up on that one. My one then for you, I guess in a vaguely similar vein, is Man City will be the only away side to win this game week.
Man City will be the... Do you know what? That was the other one I thought of.
Really? I did wonder, eventually we're going to have the same one, aren't we? Eventually.
That one did flash through my mind, but do you know what I thought? I thought you wouldn't take me on it, because I can't really see any of the other away sides winning.
Oh, well, maybe you won't take me up on this, but I do tend to try and take the field pickle. So, yeah, that's kind of why I went for it. I mean, yeah, Brentford West Ham feels like a bit of a coin flip. Palace Burnley does to an extent. Everton, you could easily see Everton have had a pretty good record against Brighton before. I mean, I'd also just chuck out there that I'll put City are the only away side to win this game week. If City don't win, then that is also a victory for you. So, you know, that's there. I mean, obviously entirely up to you, but yeah, as I say, I think generally I'm going to try and tickle your taking the field pickle.
Yeah, this isn't quite taking the field, though, is it? Because it's not like City versus a whole swathe of other teams, right?
No, sure.
Like, I think I'm trying to remember now. I mean, this is parent life here, where I'm now questioning myself. But I feel like I thought of that one and dismissed it for the very reason that I felt like it was not appealing enough, right? Like, I suppose the point is, cumulatively, I imagine if you did the maths on it, the chances of, I mean, actually, having said that, I really don't know if the chances of any of those of cumulatively at least one of those other away teams winning would be over 50%. I'm not sure. Like Sheffield United, absolutely not. Brentford, maybe you'd give them one of the better chances possibly in that group. Newcastle, obviously on current form, not scoring and conceding plenty of goals, so that's not ideal away at one of the better teams in the league, Arsenal, right?
Yeah, I mean, so City are 9-4 on, and obviously everyone else is seriously odds against. I mean, Sheffield United are 6-1, so you've got Forest at 5-1, Burnley at 3-1, Fulham at 5-1. Trying to look at the next shortest, I mean, it probably is Burnley would be in the next shortest to win. At threes, so yeah, I think Everton are just over threes, So that's kind of where you're at, where vaguely where you're at.
Yeah, and the maths is complicated for working out at least one. Well, actually, I suppose it's not that complicated because you just go one minus, we'll give hashtag maths here, one minus the probability of none of them winning.
Yes, sure.
And that would, yeah. So maybe it is workoutable fairly straightforwardly. But look, we're not going to do that. It's just a sense here I'm getting is I can't really trust any of those other teams. So I know, what it means is that I won't get some potential honey that's on offer if one of them do ends up winning, but I think I can be okay with that. So I feel like I'm not going to take you on this one.
Okay, no problem. Well, there we go. Let's wait and see what happens this game week. Let's move on to captaincy, Andy. And Haaland or who? It just feels like it's going to have to be him. I feel like even among other City assets, it's going to be him. Kevin De Bruyne obviously has been benched a bit recently. Julian Alvarez, when Haaland is playing, is just not the same FPL asset ultimately. Phil Foden, I guess you can make a case for, but realistically it's Haaland here, isn't it? And then I guess of the others, Saka playing against the team with the worst underlying defensive numbers in the league, but having just come back from a difficult game against Porto, maybe not. Ollie Watkins against Forest, maybe, but Forest have got sneaky good underlying defensive numbers as well. So just looking like Haaland all over, isn't it, here?
I mean, I think it is, yeah. I mean, Watkins against Forest isn't an awful shout, particularly with him being at home. But, yeah, as we always say, Erling Haaland. Yes, City do have a cup game in midweek. And so, with that being do or die and the potential for extra time, if it's not decided in normal time and whatever, would he want to make sure Haaland starts in that one? Yes, maybe. But they're very much in a title race, and as we've said before, it feels like they have to be doing everything they can to make sure they win every game. I suppose it doesn't also help the rotation rumours that he's just started two games in a double game week, and after the cup game he's got the Manchester derby next weekend. So if you're looking at that stretch of fixtures, might you rest him for this one, or at least not start him and just bring him off the bench if you need to? Maybe, but KDB rested obviously in the second game of their double, and you could play Alvarez as the 9 and KDB as the 10, right? So I don't know, there's some worry on that front, but I think you're still ultimately taking the gamble probably, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think a fit Haaland doesn't get rested, basically. Unless it's a real kind of like lower league cup game. So yeah, we can talk about, obviously I know he has been injured, but we talk about resting Haaland when Julian Alvarez hasn't had much of a rest either. I think he plays, and he'll play until they're not in a title race, and then maybe the attentions will shift. So I could be wrong. I've been wrong before many times, but yeah, I feel like he's the very obvious and easiest captaincy choice. Which brings us, Andy, to a little game we like to call Who the Heck Is That? Each week, Andy and I take it in turns to pick a player from the FPL universe that has to be owned by at least 5% of managers, and the other person has to guess who it is. They get 5 clues, and if they guess it after the first clue, they get 5 points. After the second clue, they get 4 points, and so on and so forth. Each time they hear a new clue, they get to stick or twist on their previous guess. So we don't reveal the answer to the end, so you can play along wherever you are listening to the FPL Lounge podcast. Andy picked up 2 points last week, correctly guessing Richarlison, which means he now leads 32 points to 24. And this is my opportunity to close the gap. Let's have it.
Simple as that. Okay.
Let's have it.
Right. Well, all right then. Clue, that was quicker than I was expecting, but fine. unlike you, Chris Hopkins.
yeah, clue. Too much waffle.
Never heard that said to you before, have you? Clue number one, then, is this player's 8th season in FPL, and they're on for their highest ever finish. Who the heck is that?
I feel like 8 seasons, one of them deceptively sort of long ones.
Never heard that either, have you?
Yep, good one. Right, Villa, 8 seasons. Maybe not Watkins. Feels a bit... bit on the short side. Louise, again, probably not. Forest, I doubt they've got anyone that's done 8 years. Brighton, similar. Everton doesn't feel like they've got many highest ever finishes. Neither have Palace, nor would have Burnley. I don't think United would have many either. Or Fulham, Bournemouth, Tom Solanke. He would have played seasons with Chelsea and Liverpool, I guess. Did you say he's already achieved it, Andy, or is on for it?
On for it.
I mean, I guess it wouldn't shock me if both applies for him, to be fair, but it might be a good place to start. City, anyone on their 8th year? I mean, Kyle Walker, I know he must have played way more than 8 seasons, but he feels like he's probably on for his best finish for a long time. Anyone in midfield? It doesn't feel like Foden would be. Grealish wouldn't be this year.
He's got 30 seconds to go.
Bernardo Silva, maybe. Maybe. Arsenal. Ben White, perhaps. 8 seasons, feels a bit much. Wolves, no. Sheffield United, no. West Ham,
10 seconds.
Bowen, but let's go with Dominic Solanke.
Going with Solanke. Okay, time's up. Clue number two. There are only two players in this player's position who have more bonus points than him this season. Who the heck is Stat?
It doesn't rule it out for me. Two players in position have more bonus points. So I guess, I mean, the two I own, Watkins and Haaland, would probably be the obvious ones. I guess Julian Alvarez could perhaps be the fly in that ointment. I've run down the fixtures, but best not forget the blank game week players or game week teams. So Liverpool, 8 seasons. Trent wouldn't be on for his highest ever finish, I don't think. Van Dijk could be. 8 years with Southampton, maybe. Who else could they have? Yeah, Salah's done more than 8 years, I think, now. Yeah, it feels unlikely that it's going to be any of them. Luton would be a probable no. Chelsea doesn't feel like they've got many 8 seasoners in there that would be on for the highest ever finish. And Tottenham, similarly. Unless I'm missing someone. Van Dijk is possible. 8 seasons. Feels like maybe a bit too many, but can't be too far away given his Southampton days. Would he be on for his highest ever finish, I guess, is the question.
30 seconds.
I guess he might be, but I'm nowhere near sure enough to switch off at this point. Solanke feels good. Well, it feels reasonable given the clue. So yeah, I'm going to stick, please, Andy, with Dominic Solanke.
You are sticking short?
Yes, please.
Okay. Clue number three. This player has never made triple figures before, but mainly because they've only ever been over 1,500 minutes once. Who the heck
is that? That, I think, would rule him out, and it would rule Van Dijk out, frankly. Only over 1,500 minutes once. It implies a young player, or possibly someone that's had quite a lot of injuries. And we did have Cole Palmer last week, didn't we? Or last time I played, I think we had Cole Palmer, who, yeah, would maybe sort of fit the mould there. Never hit triple figures. Oh, I'm trying to go back to Man City and think about players that haven't played that many minutes or have been rotated heavily. 8 seasons. I just can't think. I guess unless it is Bernardo Silva, but he had a really good season last year, so I can't see why he'd be on for his highest ever finish. I'm a bit floundering here. Anthony Gordon's just come into my head at Newcastle. 8 years feels really steep there. Yeah, I'm a bit stuck. Let's go back to Villa. 1500 minutes.
Got 30 seconds.
I think I might need 30 more minutes, mate, at this rate. Yeah, I need another clue. So I will stick with Solanke, but I'm pretty confident it's not him. I think I need another clue.
You sure?
Yes, please. Yeah.
Okay. Just remember all of the clues that you've had when you're deliberating as well at this point. But clue number four, despite being in the top 10 point scorers in his position, three of his own teammates are ahead of him. Who the heck is Stat?
Oh, well, that rules out a goalkeeper. I guess it rules out a forward as well. So three of his own, maybe it doesn't rule out a forward. So top 10 point scorers at his position, but three of his own teammates are ahead of him in that position.
Correct.
That's correct. Right. Wow. Okay. Villa mids, Villa defenders. Man, Cash? No, I just don't think it'll be him. Why am I going back to City? Yeah, I'm really stuck here.
So another way of wording this would be, you are looking for a team who would have four players of the same position
in the top 10 scorers
in that position. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that is what is stumping me somewhat. I feel like I guess there's probably two Spurs midfielders in there. Might be three Arsenal midfielders.
There's Rice's. You've got 30 seconds.
Snuck in there. Hey, it can't be. Yeah, I'm very stuck. I'm gonna switch off just to Anthony Gordon, but I'm fairly certain it's not him. So yeah, I'll switch off. But yeah,
you've got 10 more seconds.
It's definitely not Dominic Solanke. There aren't four Bournemouth forwards in the top 10 scoring forwards in the game. So I'll go. Okay. I'll switch off to Gordon, please.
Okay. Clue number five, then. That one previous season I mentioned before, in which he had gone over 1500 minutes, was last season, his first at his new club. Who the heck is Stat?
First at his new club.
So previously, in all the other seasons before that, he'd never gone over 1500 minutes or made triple figures.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I guess I thought maybe Arsenal midfielders. Could it be Arsenal defenders? Because I guess they've had a lot of points. So who we got? I said Ben White. He can't have done it. Saliba definitely hasn't, because he hasn't done eight seasons. That leaves Gabriel. So, and he can't have done 8 years. So maybe Ben White is the guy. He didn't move last year, though. So, I mean, there must be someone else, or must be a different team. City, Walker, no. Diaz, don't think so. Ake must have done more than 1,500 minutes in multiple previous seasons. Stones will have done. So, yeah. Liverpool midfielders. No, there can't be Liverpool midfielders. I just don't think they've got the
got 30 longevity.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to switch off. I'm going to have to go to Ben White because, yeah, I can't really think of anyone else. So,
10 seconds.
Ben White it is, mate.
You're going for Ben White. I think there might be some people screaming down their podcast playing device, and I think you might kick yourself when you find out who it is, because you eventually did get onto just about the right path, and you named three Arsenal defenders, but there are four, given the clue that you were given, who are in the top 10 point scorers for that position group. And Arsenal don't play three at the back, do they?
No, they play four
at the back. Sure. So who's the fourth guy?
Tomiyasu?
It's Oleksandr Zinchenko.
Oh, no.
This week, who the heck is Stats?
Oh, no.
The reason he, as again, was heavily trying to allude to, has not been over 1,500 minutes is because he was at City for all those previous other seasons. It's his eighth season. Surprisingly, only two players have more bonus points than him. That was, I think it was Trent and Trippier. I'll have to go back and just quickly check that. Yeah, Trent and Trippier. Him and Porro joint third with 13 bonus points. In the top 10 point scorers for defenders over the course, like, despite having had a bit of injuries and rotation, isn't just because of Arsenal's, you know, fantastic kind of underlying numbers this season defensively. Is in the top 10. He's actually in the top eight. He's eighth for defenders point scorers in the whole game. Those three Arsenal defenders that you named are the three that are ahead of him: Saliba, Gabriel, and White. He joined Arsenal last season.
At the end of the day, if you get those clues, you don't get it. You don't deserve any points, do you? Let's be honest. So,
well, it's always hard when you're on this side of the thing a little bit, because I mean, you sort of feel like you've written some clues to try and guide people towards it, right?
Nah, but, like, you know, I don't get me wrong, I don't think I was getting it after clue one or two, but I think it was set up for me to at least have got one, if not two, points there. So yeah, it's look, if your mind has a blank, then what are you gonna do? And yeah, named
The reason I'm saying about having a blank, like, it's more than having a blank and you might kick yourself, though, is because you were pretty much in the right
ball. Yeah. Oh, it is what it is. Never mind.
So that's a no points.
That's a big fat zero. Yeah, that's not good for this making it competitive towards the end of the season. But never mind. Stranger things have happened. All right, well, let's leave it there, Andy. Obviously, we've got plenty going on in the FPL universe with this week's blank, a double, and obviously another blank on the horizon in 29. So if our managers and our listeners have any questions, where can they get in touch?
They can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at FPL_lounge. And were you one of those people screaming Zinchenko down your podcast playing device or not? Do let us know.
Yeah, I've really got a nice sort of image in my head of people on the train sort of just like screaming about Zinchenko randomly and disturbing other passengers. Obviously do remember to rate, review and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from, because it would be really important to us, and it would really cheer me up right now. I think really cheer me up. I always feel like when I have a bad who the heck is stat, the end of the podcast is really flat. Like, yeah, because I feel
I mean,
sad.
You can hear it in your voice.
I feel sad. Anyway, we will be back. We will be back with our Game Week 27 preview. And as we said at the top of this show, we will know a lot more about the shape of the landscape of FPL for the run-in before we record our next show. So until then, Andy.
Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.